Well, finally, 17 years after the signing of the Framework Convention, 10 years after the signing of Kyoto, 5 years after our ratification of Kyoto, and a few weeks before it actually comes into force and our emissions start counting, we have a proposal for discussion about putting a price on carbon. The Greens first proposed a price on carbon in 1993, when our policy was a carbon charge. It's taken a long time. Some of the material announced this morning was not in the material that we got to read beforehand, so we're still digesting some of that. But our first assessment is the underlying structure of this is good, and if we had plenty of time, it would be a great system. But it doesn't act nearly fast enough or hard enough to stop the climate crisis. We know that leading scientists have said we've got a window of about 10 years to turn this around, to start our emissions on a downward path. The numbers we've seen this morning suggest that in 2012, our greenhouse emissions will not only be well above 1990 levels, they'll be higher than they are now. I guess it's good news that they'll be lower than they might otherwise have been, but the climate doesn't care about what they might otherwise have been. The climate cares about the amount of carbon it sees, and the amount of carbon it's going to see in 2012 from New Zealand is more than it's seeing at the moment. So we are not on track to turn our emissions downwards. There are quite a number of features in the design of the scheme that the government has adopted from the proposals that the Green Party put out as policy in March, and I think you've got a copy of those. The good points are this is a unit that is internationally tradable, that is backed by Kyoto units, and as far as we can gather, although this is not totally confirmed, there will be no additional New Zealand units issued other than what is backed by the Kyoto units that we hold. This is important because it means that the New Zealand price will be the same as the carbon price for those few people who will actually be paying it. Also consistent with our policy is that the points of obligation, the people who have to purchase and hold and then remit units to cover their emissions, will be way up the production chain. They'll be at the high level. The oil companies, the electricity companies, the big industrial producers of process emissions. So the ordinary motorist, the ordinary small firm using electricity and fuel will not have to engage with carbon trading, and I think they'll be quite relieved about that because it's going to be quite an onerous business. There is some disincentive for deforestation, which is a very significant part of our emissions and our projected emissions, is that the forests planted before 1990, which don't earn us credits overseas, but lose us credits if they're cut down, they are being deforested very fast at the moment. We proposed a replanting incentive for those forests of less than the value of the carbon in them, but enough to discourage the cutting down of those forests. The government's adopted that proposal, but what is different is we proposed that that should be paid for out of the basket of forest credits that New Zealand earns. Instead, the government has caved in to the frenetic demands of the Kyoto foresters, who believe they have an absolute property right to all of the credits that might relate to their plantings. And so the taxpayer is going to be subsidising the replanting incentive for older forests. It would have been very easy to share the Kyoto credits between post-1990 and pre-1990 forests. Everybody would have got something. You would have got the incentive effect. You would have got the reward for storing carbon in forests, but they haven't done that. And in fact, there's a big taxpayer subsidy to the forest industry. I guess the standout unfairness is that half of our emissions are not even going to come into the scheme at all until the Kyoto period is over. Farming is not going to have to do anything until 2013, and then when it does have to do something, it's only going to be responsible for the emissions that are more than 105% of what it was doing in 1990. And there are also very large, in addition to the taxpayer covering the cost of agriculture's emissions for the whole of the Kyoto period, there are a lot of other grants being made. Now, they're all very good proposals. Jim Anderton outlined them this morning. There are going to be, the taxpayer is going to pay to help farmers monitor and measure their emissions. Taxpayer is going to pay for a lot more research and assistance to the farming industry in all kinds of ways. That's all good, but that would be fine if the farming industry was also going to cover the cost of their emissions. The fact that it's difficult for them to find alternatives to methane isn't the point. The point is those emissions have to be paid for. The taxpayer is paying for them at a time when the people in the New Zealand economy who are doing best this year, the people in the New Zealand economy who have got a massive windfall profit this year, are the dairy farmers from a milk payout which is going to average $250,000 additional profit for each dairy farm. So if there was any time in history or any sector of the economy that could afford to cover its own emissions so the taxpayer doesn't have to, it would be dairy farmers, and there's no obligation to do so. Now, this all seems to stem from a 2002 Memorandum of Understanding, which the government quotes from time to time, saying that they wouldn't have to take responsibility for their emissions until the end of the Kyoto period. It turns out that is a non-binding memorandum. It has provision in it for a review this year. That review appears not to have occurred. And it includes the statement that in return for not being obliged to pay for their emissions in this period, farming is going to endeavour to reduce its emissions voluntarily by 20% below what they would otherwise have been in 2012. Well, I'll be asking in the House today whether that has occurred, and if it hasn't, then what reason there is for sticking to the other side of the bargain and continuing to support the industry for another 5 years. Other sectors don't come in all that early either. We've got a bill to the taxpayer for a five-year period. Transport comes in for four of those years, starting at the beginning of 2009. Energy users don't pay a thing until the 1st of January 2010. So 40% of that Kyoto period is 100% paid for by the taxpayer. I'm sorry, I didn't put that very well. For the first 40% of the Kyoto period, energy users pay nothing and taxpayers pay the lot. Then when energy does come in, it's very unclear who is going to have to pay how much. We're told that there will be no free allocation of units for electricity generators. So electricity generators will be having to find units to cover their whole emissions. But once you get down to the user, firms that are internationally competitiveness at risk are going to be assisted, and that's compatible with our policy too. I don't think anybody, I did see one NGO that put out a statement this morning saying that there should be no free allocation whatsoever. I don't think that stands up. If you look at what would happen to industries like New Zealand Steel, they would have to close immediately if they got no free allocation. And we don't particularly want to shut down all our industries with no benefit to the climate, because they would simply move somewhere where there is no charge on carbon. So we accept that there needs to be some protection of those industries at risk. But there's no definition here of what is an industry at risk. There's no list of what firms will be included. We know that they're going to be given free allocations up to 90% of their 2005 emissions. But it sounds as though that 90% is also the average. So there could be a very large number of firms who are going to get virtually all their credits given to them, and the rest of the economy pays for that as well. That decision has always been the hardest decision that has to be made under an emissions trading scheme. That's why the Greens never favoured an emissions trading scheme in the first place, because the political wrangling that's going to go on about who gets what in the allocation system is going to be extreme. I mean, if you thought one trap to driving up the steps of Parliament was bad, wait until the big industries start arguing about who is going to get what of that pool of free credits. And so what has the government done? They've left it until after the election to make those decisions. They've left it until after the legislation passes through Parliament. So Parliament is going to be asked to vote on legislation for an emissions trading scheme without having any idea which industries are going to get gifted it for free and how much they're going to get gifted for free. I think Parliament might jib at that, actually. I think Parliament might also jib at the fact that really simple things like coal for boilers have to wait until 2010 before they're responsible for anything. I mean, why can't we have an emissions trading scheme for the main energy sources at least from the beginning of 2009? What else did I want to say? Oh, just another little detail in terms of the coal industry. When you mine underground coal, there's a lot of methane trapped in those coal seams, and as long as as the seam's undisturbed, it stays down there. When you mine that underground coal, the methane leaks out into the air. It's a very powerful greenhouse gas. It's part of New Zealand's inventory. Under Kyoto, we have to buy credits internationally to cover the methane emissions from underground coal. But this is an extraordinary statement in the papers that says that because the coal miner has a license to mine the coal but doesn't own the methane, then they're not going to be responsible for it. Taxpayers are going to continue, not just for a short time, but forever, to cover the cost to New Zealand of methane emissions from underground coal mining. Now, most of the underground coal mining is the export coal that goes to places like India and China and increases emissions over there. We are not responsible in New Zealand from the emissions of burning the stuff, but it seems that the companies are not even going to be responsible for the methane that leaks out while they're mining it. I mean, this is not a vast quantity, but it has increased it is increasing by 450% over the near future, so it is worth including. What haven't I covered? I think probably the rest of it we can deal with in questions.
You said that you thought Parliament might jib at not having the detail of who is going to get the credits, but do you mean Parliament or do you mean the Green Party?
I would expect that Parliament will be asking for a lot more answers about allocation before they pass legislation. Certainly the Green Party will be.
And does it affect how you vote?
A lot of things will affect how we vote, and not all the information is there yet. I mean, I want to make it clear that we support the underlying structure of the scheme, but we do not support the lack of urgency in the rate at which companies and individuals have to take responsibility.
The Prime Minister used the word fair about, I don't know how many times during her speech. Do you think this way that this is set up has been?
I don't think it's fair that foresters have got to pay for deforestation from the 1st of January next year, but that farmers don't have to pay for their emissions for another 5 years after that. I don't think it's fair that the taxpayers are subsidising emissions to a very large extent. Something like two-thirds of our 2012 Kyoto bill will be paid by the taxpayer, and only about one-third, as far as we can work out from the papers, will be covered by emitters actually holding credit. So I don't think that is fair. The Prime Minister has promised assistance for vulnerable households, low-income households, from price rises. There's absolutely no indication in the papers how that will be achieved, and I understand they haven't decided yet. So that is a matter in which we have a great interest. We believe that the best way to help vulnerable people is to upgrade their homes so that they're warm and dry and take very little energy to heat. and to build much better public transport so that they don't have to take their cars to work all the time. That would help them keep their fuel bills and their power bills down without subsidising new energy. The thing we would not accept at all is the idea that you give them a rebate on their power bill or in some way subsidise their energy costs. That destroys the whole purpose of having a price on carbon. There's got to be the incentive, even for poor people, to turn the lights off when they leave the room. They're just as capable of doing that as anybody else is. We also think that we need to review the whole level of benefits, pensions, minimum wage, to see whether that is something that needs to be tweaked, if there's going to be higher cost effects on that part of society.
You can expect as it is, but the Greens will vote for this legislation, won't they, if it means the difference between getting it through or not?
Oh, the Greens will be wanting to negotiate with government on a number of improvements to the proposals before, and this is a discussion phase. This is not the legislation. This is not the final form of the legislation. This is some government proposals that have been put out for discussion. We will be negotiating with government, and when legislation comes to the House, we hope that it will have taken some of our points on board.
You made the point about the farmers sort of like having a windfall period and no time like now for them to start paying, but I guess the difficulty is that it's also a windfall for the economy, isn't it? And how do you deal with the situation that it's there's no easy answer for them to reduce methane emissions, and that has a direct effect on the economy as well?
Well, paying for those greenhouse emissions has a direct effect on the economy regardless of who does it. Makes absolutely no difference to the economy whether the taxpayers pay or the farmers pay, and the farmers are in a much better position to pay at the moment.
But if it encourages a move away from current agricultural sort of practices, which you seem to be suggesting that they need to move away from their current sort of livestock-based livelihoods, aren't you?
There are many agricultural livelihoods that don't involve methane emissions at all.
Are they as good for the economy, though, is what I'm saying?
Well, growing wine makes you quite a lot of money per acre. I'm not suggesting you can do that on all dairy farms. There's a whole range of agricultural options that are good for the economy. But it's not going to be good for the economy for New Zealand's dairy and meat products overseas to be labelled as climate abusers. It's not going to be good for our marketing at all if our farmers are seen as being subsidised for the next 5 years and able to release their greenhouse emissions. I mean, the Prime Minister and the Minister for Climate Change talked today about the risks to our agricultural markets if we're not seen as taking responsibility for our emissions. Well, I think a five-year get-out-of-jail-free card for farming plus a 90% get-out-of-free-jail card after that is going to be seen by the international community and by our markets as a big handout, as a subsidy to our farmers.
Jeanette, why do you think the government has given the agricultural sector such a free run as that in this scheme?
Well, you'd have to ask them that, but it's possible that they watched what the forest industry did over the last couple of years and decided they didn't want farmers doing that as well. But the thing is, they've got a memorandum of understanding there that they could use to say to the farming industry, well, come on, we don't see you having made this voluntary reduction. Unless you do, then we're going to start you earlier. They could also do something about fertiliser inputs and so forth. So there's a number of ways that they could do it.
Jeanette, you're talking about a lolly scramble next year over allocations. I'm not in favour of the government's proposed system yet, but in Europe, we saw an instance where over-allocation actually ended up giving some industries almost a licence to sanction to pollute. Are you concerned about that sort of scenario happening here?
Theoretically, this scheme isn't meant to do that, but I still haven't seen enough to be confident that it won't. They seem to have a pool of free credits that are going to be available to the energy intensive competitiveness at risk industries, which are basically defined in the papers as those who won't be able to pass their costs on to their customers. Now, normally you talk about steel, cement and aluminium because they, and to some extent wood processing, because they put out process emissions that are not the result of energy use. And where are their customers? Well, steel is directly competing with steel producers overseas in many countries where there isn't a price on it. Cement sells a lot of their stuff in New Zealand and some for export. Why would they not be able to pass on the price of cement? Isn't it a good thing for the price of concrete to go up in New Zealand at a time when we've got a lot of technological opportunities to use timber instead of concrete in building, and we need a price signal to do that? The timber industry needs to be able to benefit from those technological opportunities by concrete carrying the true price of its production.
So if your doubts over allocations are correct, it's entirely possible that we may see an instance, as we did in Europe, where some where emissions actually continue to climb despite a theoretical cap and trade.
There is no doubt that emissions in New Zealand will continue to climb. That is what this policy does. In 2012, they're going to be higher than they are now. The targets that have been set include offsetting a lot of the emissions by purchasing units overseas. The target for stationary energy relies on carbon capture and storage. We have no idea at the moment whether that is going to be technically proven and feasible or what it's going to cost. All of the targets rely on offsetting by purchasing overseas credits, and sure, that's what Kyoto does, and I think it's very good that they have announced some interim targets, 2025, 2030 and 2040 for different sectors. It's good they've put some numbers on it, but you've got to look at how those numbers are arrived at. And at this stage, it's easy to buy units overseas by doing clean development mechanisms in developing countries where there are lots of opportunities. I don't think that will be easy by 2040. I think the idea that there's still going to be units to buy overseas at an affordable price in 2040 so that we can continue to emit what we want to emit and just pay for somebody else to reduce somewhere else. I think those opportunities are going to be drying up by 2040, or they're going to be very, very expensive.
Do you reckon that you're going to get any concessions on the sticking points that you brought up today, where the government has so clearly tailored this far out from the election for certain interest groups?
We'll have to see. They have to get it through the House.
Are there any non-negotiables for the Greens then to get the vote, of any of the sticking points that you've made today?
I guess the non-negotiable is that we have to do the very best we can for the climate, because that is our job here. And we will be doing everything possible to ensure this is a more climate-friendly scheme than it is now. It's a good start, but hey, it could go further.
Have you made any commitment to back any legislation to
select me? No. Haven't discussed that yet.
In what parts of today were you not aware of when you went in?
Oh, the targets were very closely guarded secrets. I did know about the renewable electricity target of 95% because I've been part of developing that and led some of the work in ETHER that led to that, but the targets of carbon neutrality for sectors by 2030-2040 were very closely guarded secrets and are actually quite questionable targets when you think about how they're going to be achieved.
So just to reiterate, you're just wanting more urgency. That's what you're calling for more urgency in regard to this area.
We're wanting something done within that 10-year window of opportunity that is all we've got. You know, we're wanting them to listen to the science. If they'd done this scheme 10 years ago, it would have been great. We'd have been out there celebrating. But actually, New Zealand's wasted 10 years. And now we're putting in place the kind of slow, gradual, let's not upset anybody scheme that should have been done 10 years ago. And there's not time for that. The problem is too urgent. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.